Welcome back to another episode of Life Sci AI, the podcast series. And we are well underway for series 5. And today we are joined by a company that Cypra are partnered with right now. And I personally have been watching from afar for the last 2 or 3 years at the kind of innovation they are bringing to digital therapeutics. We're really, really happy to have the CTO of Alex Therapeutics join us today, Oliver Fleetwood. And Alex Therapeutics are an innovative digital therapeutics company that is a platform which is based out of Sweden. And what they do is they combine artificial intelligence with traditional CBT and ACT therapies for mental health care. And I will let Oliver introduce himself and a bit more into detail on Alex Therapeutics, because I definitely didn't do it justice from the amazing stuff that you do. But first off, welcome to the podcast, Oliver. It'd be great to learn a little bit more about yourself and Alex, and then as ever, what your purpose is as well.
Yeah, of course. Thanks, Nick. Pleasure to be here. Yes, so I'm Oliver, the CTO and co-founder of Alex Therapeutics. I'm a physicist by training originally, so I have spent my career's been a bit back and forth. After my graduation, I spent some time working as a CTO at another startup, and then I eventually went back and did a PhD in theoretical computational biophysics. I was essentially doing simulations of proteins and how they interact with drugs and hormones and such. So that was like at the very other end sort of the spectrum where we are now. But during my PhD studies, I also started Alex Therapeutics with my co-founder, John, who's now our CEO. Now I've been working there since, basically. So Alex, I think we started with, you know, with the mission to help people and make therapy is more accessible through digital means, or smartphones more specifically, and also to make them personalizable and like clever through AI. And you know, we saw this opportunity basically that we have this, especially in psychology, we saw that there are these evidence-based treatments such as CBT, which we thought we could bring into a digital setting and like go beyond having like a PDF that you follow. So actually have like interactive like programs, which also sort of adapt to your needs a bit better. And we started with smoking cessation, and like we're still, that's still like our flagship product now. We have a partnership with Pfizer for this product, but it was never like our end goal. We always saw that this is like a scalability, not only through like markets and the user base, but also into different indications. Because when it comes to like addiction and mental health, different diseases and like patient groups can have a lot in common. So we've grown the company a bit since. We're now 15 people full time, all based in Stockholm, having a few more recruitments in the pipeline. We're also now in like the more chronic disease and mental health space. And what I think is great, and which we'll probably go into more about in this episode, is that these like products, although they can be like have served different intended purposes, they share technology to a pretty wide extent, but they're still very like isolated, separate products. So and since this was our like vision from the beginning, and we stay true to it, we also built the technology that way. I think about the purpose. I mean, the purpose here was always to make an impact and help people. And you know, I don't have like a personal relationship to smoking specifically, but it's always great to see when people come back to you and like you hear the success stories directly from users. Super satisfying. But then also in the mental health space, I think that's like, there's just so much to do in our time now. It's such a huge issue, and like we need to tackle it from all types of angles. And I really think that like DTX or digital therapeutics, it can really like fill in a lot of blanks here and like bridge between like different parts of healthcare. And I think we'll get more into that later. So I think that's really driving me, is that this is like a difficult real world problem that we can solve like with technology, basically.
Yeah.
And then, you know, purpose more on a day-to-day basis. I really do like the early stages of a company, like the innovative stages and the growth stages. I really like that. Like it can be a bit messy sometimes, but I also like that does drive me.
Yeah.
You have the opportunity to make an impact in like your everyday work too.
Yeah. So let's probe into that last part of your answer there, around really being interested in the innovative early stage of a company. Can be messy, as you said. So as someone that's been involved with in two early stage startups in this career, what would you say your learns looking back at the first one to now have been?
Yes. So like, I think with Alex, we've gone a bit further. So of course I've seen more. I mean, there are just so many takeaways, right? Like that was more of a like real roller coaster ride with like on a weekly basis. So I think that was one that was a very good like training in that sense. You just like keep it cool. Like things do get better. If things go terribly wrong, there's always like a second chance and so on. Then I think on the more like it became really obvious, like in a good way, that you need to set up a good team. And there's like you can't really take any shortcuts in your hiring. Like, and that was the CTO there too. So really like do take your time, do code tests, do proper interviews. Like it will, like you can't be 100% sure it's the perfect candidate, but it can be like you can really reduce the risk. And if you get in the wrong people, like you're done basically. Yeah. So
yeah, and that's super important, making sure that those early hires are as strong as possible and your processes are as robust as possible for it. And taking that into then, is that part of your consideration when you're looking at creating a robust platform? Is it hiring? Is it technology choices? Like when you think about the early stages of creating a proof of concept balance to market, I guess, versus creating something that you expect to scale?
So it's a good question. So I think I don't think like from that point of view, like recruiting is not necessarily like the hurdle. It's maybe rather that the people who are working on it like take good care of them, so that you do take some time, right? So there's a big benefit if you have some people working for a while here to like get really involved in the product and the platform and feel and like take ownership of it.
Yeah.
And then of course, like you can't do that. Like it can't be a one-man show forever, right? But I think it for coding in general, it you get a better foundation if you have like a smaller team working very dedicated on it than like having a high turnover.
Yeah.
Then with the, I think we didn't really mention that, but you said the market, right? I think that's something that's a learning too, right? You need to figure that out quite early on, even if there's like a market, is it ready for you and so on. Mm. And that should really like,
how do you figure out the market is ready for you? That's, I mean, a lot of people do say, when they're successful, they're like, there was a right time to market. The previous episode with Sonio was very much, you know, we had a space, there was a wide open market gap, we went for it and we executed. So how do you figure that out?
It's a good question. I mean, and I think so like my the previous startup was in HR, right? And it's kind of obvious, like you can reduce your lead time in processes by a lot, but like how do you still to make them buy it is difficult.
Yeah.
And I think with where we are now with the DTX space, it's sort of a similar problem. Like I think that there's definitely like value you can provide to companies, especially and to the healthcare sector, but it's a long sales process basically. You have to keep yourself afloat for that, because you need, like, we're now in the regulatory like software as a medical device space. So the lead times are very long for a startup. Like you need to get regulatory approval and collect clinical evidence. But like you have to find a way to make it through that period. And for us, that has been really to partner up with bigger companies who may have like the runway, but not the like technological know-how. So yeah. In like typically pharma companies in our way.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So just to make sure, obviously market fit, super important. Yeah. Anything else that you would consider when, or if someone is listening to this now, and you said, you know, you started Alex with John during your PhD. So if there is someone where, or a group of people listening to this, where they are you and John during your PhD and they're just starting something out, and especially in the DTX space, there are a lot of new things coming through. What would you say the key technical considerations that you would put in place for making a robust and scalable platform?
Yeah, so there are a couple, right? Of course, it depends on how bootstrapped you are, maybe. So it's always like to get your product out there as soon as possible, right? I think that's take on. But then what is as soon as possible? That depends on the circumstances a bit. Yeah. So like, are you going down selling to like healthcare or going down the regulatory paths? Like we didn't start there at Alex. We went direct to consumer.
Yeah.
And then we quite early on pivoted. Like that's a much shorter path. You need less resources. It's a great way to see if like what you're doing is working or like if it's appreciated by patients. So I would definitely recommend that for people going into there. But if you have a plan like ever to go into the more like medical space, regulatory space, do read up on it early on and like have a plan for it because there are things you can do in your product. There are also like, it's slightly different in different markets and so on. So it's really important to be aware of it. And I think you need to form your own opinion, like make a first version, learn, of course, talk to experts, but, like they don't know your business strategy, like what your competitive advantage is. And like very few people, if anyone, when it comes to DTX, are like really, really aware of how this works in how this space works in like all aspects. So you need to like be willing to like learn that and be willing to maybe make mistakes, but then also like take ownership for those mistakes. So that's kind of a high level. Then I would of course have like more specific advices on the technical side, but basically it's like get the first version out there and learn and iterate, but also come up with a sort of like long-term plan which you can adapt further. That goes for every startup, I guess.
And is there anything looking back now you would do differently with your platform that you think could have just changed that? And high science is a great thing, especially with engineering, but you think you would have done a little bit differently or scaled quicker or, you know, gone more product focused or learned more about SAMD earlier on, pivoted earlier? I don't know.
Yeah. So, everything and nothing, right? It's an iterative process.
Yeah.
So like I said, we started off in the consumer space, but quickly transitioned like into a more regulatory and medical landscape due to like market reasons for one thing. They could also mention there was also, you know, so when you go into that space, it's more like evidence driven rather than driven by like in-app purchases and, you know, gamification, all that stuff. So there's also sort of like an impact aspect there that maybe that's where you can have the most long-term impact. But making that pivot, right? Some things had been better if we knew that from the start, like when it comes to structuring, like just how you structure requirements for a platform. Maybe have a second thoughts about like you know data privacy in different regions. Like, are you going to have like one backend spread in the EU or US, or having different products in the EU and US? Those type of questions. Then there were things on that side we did good, I think. Like we saved a lot of data early on. We knew that was going to be important. We should have saved like even more, of course, but like that was good. Then I think we're still like, we did do like a version 2 of our platform, sort of started 2 years ago with that. And it was a like real improvement, but I wouldn't have done that differently. That was like the perfect time to do a version 2, so to say. Like it's, we hadn't been able to do that from the start because we didn't know what we needed. So I think that. Then of course with the product side, it's, we're trying to run, like have the modules and like pieces to put together a digital therapy for different purposes, right? We could, I think from like, we could have gone even more all in on that. So that is really like crystal clear that this is this CBT model we're building. We're building this ACT module and maybe in our value proposition to customers that like, this is what you get by working with us.
Okay. So just delving into a bit about your the technology behind your product then, because part of this episode, we'll delve into generative AI, LLM models and what that means for DTX and, you know, are patients ready for it? But before going into that on a more general point of view, it'd be really interesting to know what your platform does and sort of how the AI is connected to achieving therapy goals and sort of better patient outcomes through the use of technology and AI for us, and maybe sort of explain where your models are in terms of self-learning and how that, what that means for patients as well.
Yes, and I actually think I'll need to go into the LLM, generative AI and like LLM question here too. So I could say about our products too, like it's important to know that they are like completely like valid and great products without any sort of like AI turned on. As like historically we designed like a best practice digital therapy for the intended like patient population or like market, like what, and then there are of course some different pathways you can go down depending on like choices made in the app. So it's still like sort of personalized but deterministic. And then there have been some, then we've started like making some of these like pathways you can do, if you call it that. So let's say you need to use a tool of some sort, like there are tools in our products. You want to use one of them to handle your cravings so you're not smoking or something.
Yeah.
Then we can use AI to provide the best tool for you, like in the current situation you're in. And that we can do, you know, we can use historical data to make the best recommendation based on that data. And we have like good like validation that sort of the recommendations are good, right? It's not, but they are like in the context of the entire product, right? So it's we first design the product and then we see that here there are like opportunities for AI like improvements and fine tune. And so for that we've used more like it sounds weird maybe to say like traditional machine learning, but sort of let's say last decade machine learning, which is still very, very useful. But it's more, you know, classification and reinforcement learning to make sure that all the recommendations we give you, they are good to help you like with your like current state you're in, but also to optimize your like the outcome of your therapy overall. So let's say you're smoking, then the outcome would be to quit smoking or smoke less, right?
Yeah.
Let's say you have some mental health issues, then you probably do some like assessment such as the general anxiety disorder assessment or something, and your objective is to reduce that. Anyway, so so I mean, it's just like this. I think that's a valid use case. That's where we started on. It's also been very good going into the regulatory landscape because it means that we, since AI and medical device is a very, how should I say, it's a very difficult space. That means we don't need to bet on our, like, we can turn off the AI basically.
Yeah.
If that's required from us. And that's very important.
And is that from a regulatory point of view? You're thinking like, if that's going to be too many barriers, you can turn it off and still have a revenue generated product, which is approved.
Yes, that's one aspect for sure. The other aspect is like, how do you even get started, right? You need this data somehow. And since this data is it's like specific to our product, we need to get the first users in. And they should, and they of course should have like the best patient journey possible.
Yeah. So you're not using AI to get the data initially. to then sort of create those AI models for the future based on the really high quality patient data you have from the first versions of your product, which isn't particularly, is more classical AI based, you said.
So, and of course, then there's like, if you go into, if you create another product in a similar area or something, you could probably transfer knowledge from that. But I think like, I think now what's interesting, if I'm allowed to dive into the generative AI bit, I think that what we really like see now and what we're like developing and betting on now is the opportunity is to use AI to actually like generate the therapies in a different way. So to use that as a tool, like when we develop these products. So like how should, let's say you have something very specific. You have someone with anxiety taking a certain drug in a certain country or something. How do you make like all your digital therapy, which will contain like a lot of tools, text, exercises, sessions, and like audio, etc. How do you make that as personalized as possible? And then, and like you can do that manually, right? You hire the experts, you hire agreements, but you could also get your first version with generative AI. And that's like such a huge time saver, like, you know, orders of magnitude faster. It takes a few minutes, costs a few dollars, and then you have your first digital therapy. So I think that's really a potential game changer for us. And it's like unrelated to what we have done in the past. Like we can still continue doing that. But this is, this is just different, right? Because it's more like it's taking work from, it's more like similar to what a therapist would actually do.
Do you have the initial effects as to what that will do for patients at the moment through, or is it very much you are your hypothesis stage at the moment?
To go through in a bit more detail what we have done or what we haven't. So the state of large language models, like the last year, it's essentially the year when they became like really, really good for many purposes. They had sort of, and now this year has been like when they've opened up like APIs to them in a more like open AI, but also now there are a bunch of others out there to their models. What we've done is basically we plugged this into our platform. So we have all the like technical building blocks to piece together a digital DDX like or an app, right? But then we make the like pieces of the therapy, like what are you go again the content that can be provided through an AI instead of being like essentially written by a human from the start. So we've done that. Like, of course, we're still prototyping. We're experimenting. We have a research project where we're going to release later this year, a product for tobacco cessation specifically. So this is again, this is a, like a research project. It's not our like big go to market project, but it's still going to be handed out to real people, which is completely AI generated.
Wow.
Yeah. But it's where we are now, like it's kind of easy to have a live integration so that you type something in your app and you make a request to like some open AI or whatever, and you come back with a piece of content. Like we can do that, but it's not really like that's not like necessary either. We can incorporate this in the like the building phase, basically.
Yeah.
So we also have sort of a human as a middleman that can go through it and validate that you're not giving like dangerous advice, you're not putting the patient at risks. So it's more like adding, you know, ChatGPT or your LLM as a team member.
I think one analogy or like turn of phrase that I had given to me by a CTO of an SAMD company was, we're talking about automated pipelining and testing and such like. And it was like, Nick, it'll it's automated, but with the caveat of it being SAMD.
Yeah.
You have like automated
yeah.
for
yes.
e-commerce, you have automated for insurance platforms. We'll probably end up having LLM models or ChatGPT or whatever, but for SAMD, where there'll be that slight human intervention still to make sure that what you're doing is correct. And there's no bad advice on it, because we can never sort of, I guess, get to a position, because of where the industry that we're in, that you'll be able to have free reign on it, because there is always that slight potential, right?
Yeah, so I really like the way you phrased it. So it's like completely automated for an SAMD, because I think it is completely automated. Like, it's really easy. You press a button, you get the therapy, right?
Yeah.
But that's not how you... And you're completely allowed to do that, but you're not allowed to release that product without assessing the risks involved, right? And you need like a human for that. So
yeah, you'd always need someone to press the red button at the end.
Yes, exactly. So I'm happy you understood that and made the analogy, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And so where do you think the regulatory bodies, and we just touched on there, that you always need the human in touch there for the release. And you mentioning around sort of taking the AI in and out as when you need to, as well, into your product, and other DTX platforms being software-led or AI-led. And it's taken us a long time to get to here where we are for the DTX community. There was only... this year, I think only a month or so ago, we're recording this in July, so maybe a few months ago when this is released, was there a definition of digital therapeutics by the ISO? Which is nuts. So what do you think the regulatory pushback is going to be, or are they even ready to start considering utilizing generative AI in these products?
Yeah, so it's a bit ironic, because I think they were just catching up, or not really catching up, but they were getting closer to, like, you know, AI in general, right? And now this sort of new generation of AI comes out, and it'll probably take a few years before they're caught up.
Yeah.
I think we should focus on like the opportunities here, really. So what DTX is a lot about is, of course, making healthcare more available to patients. And I think that doesn't exactly change with generative AI necessarily. Yeah. Like, when it comes to everyone already has a smartphone, most people will have a wearable soon.
Hmm.
But what it can do is to personalize your care like a lot more, because it's... it's so fast compared to like human interventions, and it could also really improve like the content, both from a clinical aspect and like sort of either like write it or just like rewrite it and comment it, like everything in like that stage.
Yeah,
it can have a huge impact, and that of course goes to like a lot of applications, right? Yeah. Everyone's probably using this to some sense when they use the autocomplete function or whatever, right? But it will become better and better. But I think it's also like an opportunity for DTX, because this has been a pretty tough year for the industry.
Mm.
Like some big companies going bust, like Pear Therapeutics in especially. Maybe the like reimbursement, like those DTXs that are on market and reimbursable, maybe they're not generating as much revenue as people were expecting. So it doesn't mean like this is the end of DTX as it is, but I think this is an opportunity where, you know, DTX could become the way generative AI is brought into digital health.
Mm-hmm. So, that's an interesting way of looking at it.
Yeah.
Sort of thinking like the analogy of, you know, innovation happens, regulation just about creeps up to where it should be, and then boom, a new massive bit of innovation happens. And I like your positive take on the fact that DTX could be the, because we're going through such regulatory changes in DTX, you know, think about SAMD in 2017, and those regulatory changes and what that did for the industry. We're sort of in a similar position. So we could, we're in a position where we could write in around generative AI, and that could be the end for digital health. I didn't think about it that way. But going to the patients, I always think of patients, of different people that I interact with, you know, friends, family, and things like that, sort of how engaged they are with technology. Do you think people are ready? Do you think patients are ready for generative AI, ChatGPT treatments?
So, despite all the skepticism and reasons against this, I do think so. So I think there's like really an unmet need for treatments in many areas, like, and maybe mental health in particular, where this could be really useful. I think that being said, I don't think like ChatGPT or Google Bard are ready to take on that role.
Yeah.
Like at least not with some sort of like control and fine tuning. I do more on a technical level. I rather expect this to be like you mentioned before, like LLMs or similar that are fine tuned for this purpose. Right.
Yeah. Do you think that there could be a healthcare based LLM that's open source that comes out? Do you know one that's in the works?
Yeah, I was thinking about it. I know DeepMind had one, right? But I'm not sure about the open source tag on it.
Yeah.
But I mean, they're like definitely in the works, right? I'm not keeping up to date on what's open source and what isn't.
Yeah.
So again, I think the general large language models, they have read like all the papers on medicine and psychology out there, like it's already incorporated into them. So I think really the challenge is more the risk management, right? And then secondly, how, even if you solve that problem, like how do you convince the regulatory bodies and then the hospitals and doctors and patients that it's actually working?
Yeah, I suppose like just to sort of think sort of quite positively, hypothetically here, people 10 years ago probably never thought an AI model would receive regulatory approval in healthcare. Probably having a similar conversation 10 years ago around AI, and you know, there's probably some that were given regulatory approval back then, but I'm thinking more of the heavy hitting assistive diagnostics technology that's out there now. Do you think that there'll ever be like an LLM or a ChatGPT or a Google Bard type platform which receives regulatory approval and is almost managed from a regulatory standpoint, so that that becomes the standard plugin into healthcare technology?
I mean, maybe, right?
Is it possible even, do you think? They're self-learning. Does that defeat the object of being self-learning to control it?
So it's a good question, right? So maybe it's a difficult at some point, right? But I would also ask the question, like, is that really necessary, at least at this point? Like when you have, because today we have like close to nothing, right? If we want to make an improvement, maybe we don't need like a self-training model plugged into the healthcare system. Maybe we should aim for some intermediate steps. And I think what we discussed here could be that, okay, so you use AI to generate like a library of therapies.
Yeah.
And you validate them, whatever. And you can sort of, so you increase the coverage of DTX by orders of magnitude. Maybe that's the first step. For example. And then at some point, you have an LLM which isn't retrained on patient data, because that's that's tricky. But that's sort of like what was the case for SAMD to begin with. I think that they had like image recognition algorithm, which had to like freeze the weights of their models. And then, you know, if they retrained them, they had to make a new regulatory approval and get a new regulatory approval. So it could be something similar.
Yeah. But just on what we've been talking about is obviously pretty advanced. Pretty advanced AI and the development also in your platform. I asked this question to Tom Breeze on the first episode, the CCO of Dockler, and it was around technology and the healthcare gap that's already prevalent across the world. And it's relatively closing, but then also I feel personally that the technology gap across the world with new advances coming very, very quickly can also, to some extent, without being controlled or managed properly, will widen the technology gap across the world between those that have got the access to the most developed technology and those that just don't have the access to very basic technology we would determine now because of a lack of infrastructure, because of a lack of training, because of a lack of the ability to buy these things as well. So do you think, when Tom gave this answer, he mentioned around patient monitoring, remote patient monitoring and such like, he basically gives the company Dockler, gives them all the hardware and software needed to do it. So to what extent does digital therapeutics potentially compound the healthcare gap between the haves and the haves not around the technology barriers, such as lack of infrastructure? And as a follow-up, what potentially does Alex Therapeutics do in making sure that you have as wider access available to your platform as possible?
To answer your first question, I think DTX and digital health in general will play an important part in like narrowing the health gap rather than increasing it. And like regardless of that, I think most importantly, it can be used to increase the like bottom level of healthcare in the world. So like those people who have access to very limited healthcare, if they can be given like you mentioned, some hardware which is hopefully not too expensive, or you know, a smartphone.
Yeah,
and you can start getting here like probably decent healthcare from that. That could still be a huge improvement. So maybe that's the most important thing at this stage, is to like increase the bottom level rather than closing the gap necessarily. But I think it will play an important part in closing the gap in the end too, if managed properly, right?
And that's always my fear. Making sure that those people do have access to the hardware that gives them access to your amazing platforms.
And just a caveat there, and when it comes to AI, for example, there's a lot of talk in bias in AI, and I think that's like, it's inevitable, right? It's if you want to mimic human intelligence, you will get the bias in there. But I think that's really important if you do want to distribute your like digital therapies to other countries outside the EU and the US. You need to make like cultural adaptations. You need to take their like lifestyle, their diseases, their like what other therapies are they taking, other drugs and so on. You need to take all of that into account. So there's like a bias in DTX design and development at this point too, if everyone like aims for the US.
That's so interesting you mentioned around the bias needed for DTX to be successful, because I guess to some extent it's not always the same, because humans are built differently. Each human is slightly different. So with a drug, they try and get the largest law of average, I guess, to have the same impact across different sort of makeups of human beings, no matter where they are in the world. But with a DTX, because it can be very, I guess, some of it is language based with PCBT, ATT, or whatever it is. We saw a really interesting presentation at DTX Europe by the company NEN. And they were saying because they were looking at sort of mental health provision for children who have cancer, and they have it through digital therapeutics. And they were so conscious going into Spanish speaking areas of the United States that not only does you're not translating it as an American English, you have to make sure you translate it colloquially, you know, and making sure that that is prevalent across the scalability. We go back to the very first thing we talked about around sort of scalable, yeah, robust platforms,
yeah,
and attaching that maybe to culturally scalable DTX, yeah, platforms is going to be super important as well to, like you said, making sure we have bottom-up approaches, we lift the bottom up, that we do it, yeah, from a culturally sensitive and understandable point of view.
Yeah, very important. It's back to personalized healthcare in the end, I think. So it's not just about like your age and weight. There are like more factors into like your personal characteristics than that. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, time has flown by, and thank you so much. There's been a lot of really interesting technical pieces in there, technical viewpoints, that I'm sure a lot of people, there's a lot of chatter online around this sort of area of technology as well. We'd love to follow up on you with you about, if someone's got a question, obviously this is going to be all over our social media, Alex Therapeutics' social media, but if someone has a burning question, Oliver, to either agree or disagree with you, what's the best way to get in touch with yourself?
Yeah, so I think a good starting point could be LinkedIn, actually. So I'm Oliver Fleetwood, or you search for Alex Therapeutics, you'll find me on LinkedIn, and I do think we'll also share this podcast there.
Yeah.
And they could also go to our website, alextherapeutics.com, where they'll find more about our platform and contact information.
Yeah. Awesome.
Brilliant. Yeah, happy to continue these discussions offline.
Absolutely. Yeah, I saw someone yesterday on LinkedIn commenting around you know, ChatGPT within healthcare and such as well. So there's a lot of thoughts and a lot of people talking about it. So I'm sure there'll be people wanting to get in touch with you and talk about it. So thank you once again for joining us on the podcast, and I know it's going to be a really exciting period for Alex Therapeutics across the next 6 to 12 months from what we've spoken about between yourself and I and John the CEO, and what you've got as tasks we're looking for talent wise. So it can be really, yeah, interesting, and I don't know, just a shout out, are you going to be at any of the DTX events coming up? I know DTX Europe is coming up in Berlin in December. Are you going to the end of the USA events at all? Or
I believe my co-founder John will go to the US event. So yeah, we usually have one person on most of the DTX series conferences. So that's a good opportunity to catch up.
Cool, awesome, brilliant. So if you're going to those events, definitely catch John on that. And like I said, thanks once again, Oliver, and thank you guys for listening, watching, and supporting the podcast. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Nick.